Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
Fat Stream by Rudy Rucker. From the collection Complete Stories. Music by Fog Machine. Read by Jean-Paul Garnier, Zara Kond, Patricia Thompson, Tamara Good, and Red Blue Black Silver. I'm Zach, and I hang with this highly charismatic woman, Zick. We have a streamer show out of San Francisco. It's called Zick Zack. I'm the eye, and Zick is the star. She's a natural. People can't stop looking at her. Gestures, voice, expressions, phrasing, she reels them in. Me being the eye means I wear a helmet with 8 outward-pointing cameras. Also, a pinhead selfie cam aimed at my face. Our stream's users are interactively immersed. That is, we're sending them so much data that they're in a reality bubble containing Zick and me. They can move around in our virtual space, and they can look any direction they please. Ambient eyeball kicks. They imagine they're with us, a member of our posse. Since I'm the eye of our reality bubble, the patched together image of my body is FUBAR. Our streamware filters out this degraded geometry and replaces it with a textured wireframe model of me. We use my live selfie stream for the model's face. Not that I'm anything special to look at. A skinny single guy in his 30s, sadly yearning for love, never the right woman, never the right time. Zick is the one the users watch. My high-def cameras lock onto her. She wears a couple of pinhead selfie cams as well, filling in any bits that my cams don't cover. Most of the users hang close to Zick. Some of them watch her from an inch away. Not that she sees them. We've got 2 others in our crew, Gustav and Clabber Girl, skewed hipsters like Zick and me. Gustav is 6'4" and big around the waist, with a reasonable amount of muscle. He has the largest 45 record collection in town. Clabber Girl is hard-bitten and tattooed, with dishwater hair and an unpredictable laugh. They keep the stream live and do their best to block malware feedback. My voice is a big part of the show. I go for manic, weird, and insinuating, punctuated with bursts of gibberish and flashes of heartfelt corn. I'll pretty much say anything, whatever keeps the stream bouncing, even if it's rude. We have fans, we have haters. Our show runs 6 nights a week, with Mondays off. Often we end our streamcasts at Seedy's, an all-night dive in the Tenderloin. We get lit with other streamers, both local and remote. Eyes and stars blending their bubbles, mixing sly, strange image flashes, zapping each other with hideous strobe, running psychedelic feedback, letting the ambient chaos take us where it may. Sometimes our jams are the best part of the show. This one particular Sunday night, a week before Christmas, we're at Seedy's, jamming with a couple of solo streamers, a kazoo raver from Oaktown, and a surfer from Santa Cruz. Plus, there's a remote eye and star pair. They're not talking, just gesturing. According to their stream tags, they're Jumpy and Sex from Wichita, Kansas. Jumpy is the eye. His body image shows a guy in tight jeans and a striped sweatshirt. I like his looks. Zex, the star, is a woman wearing yellow construction boots and a sequined hot couture gown with only one sleeve, like a model in Vogue. It's 3 a.m., and Zick is vamping a torch song, winding things down. The kazoo raver morphs his Raz into big band swing. The surfer is sculpting cold light waves. Zex, in the boots and gown, is doing Tai Chi moves. Fine, 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 vine. But then Jumpy points his finger at me, and oopsie daisy, I'm screaming. I'm not in control. I've been pawned. My voice has rhythms like sentences, but none of the words sound familiar. My visual field is sweeping in a circle. I see an old world city. I'm hearing bells. Gustav wrestles me to the ground and kills my feed. Clabber Girl takes me home. I conk out. Monday morning, I call Gustav. He tells me he's traced through our log that Jumpy used a back-channel exploit to pawn me. a reverse immersion from their spoofed IP. And of course, they're not from Wichita. Clabber Girl's done a terabyte Bayesian analysis that traces their stream to a server in Budapest. Monday afternoon, I check out some public streams of Budapest. I see footage of a river, a skating rink, and a hipster bar called Zimpla. I'm exhausted like you wouldn't believe. I go back to bed and sleep clear through Monday night and well into the next day. And then it's back to our warehouse for the Tuesday night Zigzag show. Zick, Clabber Girl, and Gustav are already there. They have a new piece of electrical machinery that resembles a Tesla coil. It has a short, stout column with wire wound all around it. There's an insulated hand grip at one end of the column, and a metal torus on the other end, like a donut. I ask them what the thing's for, but they feed me a line of jive.
"Good for meat-space zaps,"
goes Gustav.
"Chip frying, signal overloads,"
adds Clabber Girl.
"It makes purple sparks,"
says Zick.
"Nice eyeball kicks."
"Where'd you get it?" I ask.
"Found it at CD's,"
says Gustav.
"After you and Clabber left, it was lying on the floor."
Whatever. I don't have the energy to grill my so-called friends, now turned so sly. I need to brace myself for tonight's run. We'll be heading to Union Square to stream the happy throngs around the big Christmas tree. Lame stream, mainstream. Zick wants to buy shoes and a schoolgirl frock at Macy's. She's hoping they'll comp her the goods because we're semi-famous. After Macy's, we'll go out into the intersection where Powell hits Market, screw up the traffic. Shoppers scolding us. Might be funny. And then, if we don't get busted, we'll trundle back to CD's.
"You ready?"
goes Zick.
"You look scared."
She's all business, saving her enchantress routine for the cameras. "Wondering how late we'll run," I mutter. Don't like what happened Sunday night.
"Your voice sounds rusty,"
says Zick.
"You damaged it, yelling that hard, like a raving maniac. Keep it up and you'll scare our users away."
Sex and Jumpy are the ones I'd like to scare away.
"They just wanted to play,"
says Zick, tossing her hair. I've got the Danube River in my head, I tell her. Muddy, frigid, dark. Jumpy dragged me into it. That's why I screamed. Why are you such a bitch?
"We need focus from you,"
says Zick, her voice hard.
"And empathy. Tonight is important. Those two Hungarians, I saw them today. We talked. And I didn't scream like a crazy person."
"How did they reach you?"
"They came in through, I don't know, it was my doorbell or my toaster or some scungy hacker crap like that. We discussed a deal. They'll be at Union Square tonight. They want to partner with us. Gustav and Clabber Girl are down with it too. Good for everyone."
"As if," I tell Zick. I turn to Gustav and Clabber Girl. "Can you block them? Our Tesla coil thing, it'll help?"
"Maybe not,"
says Gustav, his voice deep and slow.
"Sex and Jumpy have a fat stream. Very subtle. Quantum coherent."
"They come on like a wisp of hiss,"
says Clabber Girl.
"A transient buzz, and then foop."
She unleashes her graveyard laugh.
"The Wichita linemen are on the line,"
adds Gustav, crooning the words, heavily significant and mysterioso. I feel incredibly paranoid. My posse is setting me up for a blown mind burn. Zick smiles at me, as if she knows exactly where my head is at. She hands me my camera helmet.
"Solidarity, bra.
V-space out, yes?"
adds Clabber Girl, faking a Hungarian accent.
"And then we make happy ending."
She lights a cigarette and jams it into the corner of her mouth. The smoke drifts across her weathered face. Her eyes are bright and amused. Screw them all. I put on my helmet. Sometimes, when I'm streaming, I use my regular vision. But not tonight. Not with my three buds coming on so weird. I pull down my display goggles to cover my eyes. Clabber Girl sparks our transmission and we're live, the four of us hopping out of our warehouse, our feet clomping the cold pavement. We catch an electric robo-car, gently humming it tools down back streets to the pulsing center of town. Good visuals tonight. San Francisco hues, lavender neon martini glasses, orange flicker-cladding jumpsuits. glowing magenta-blue graffiti, jugglers with red and green flares. I shade our stream towards the warm end of the spectrum. I feel high, even though I'm deeply afraid, like a soldier going into combat. Six in the seat next to me, doing a routine, preening, posing, jabbering about shoes. She sounds brittle. We're all thinking about the elephants in our bubble, Jumpy and Six. Elephant in Hungarian is elephant talk. How do I even know that? I voice activate my video brush and begin collaging in images from my horde, filling the dank, empty spaces of my stream, gesturing with my hands to position the visuals just so. Clabber Girl likes this part. I open a channel so she can tweak too. Let there be gnarl, I intone, and I go into a rap inspired by Zik's mention of shoes. Shoe goo glue, shoe fly pie, cobbler's last, the last supper club, Custer's last stand, stand by me at the Fornication Nation Union Station, the zigzag stream, everyone's a star. When the jive gets good to me and the visuals flow, well, at first the users feel like they're seeing our thoughts, but then it gets gooder and they start to think they're seeing their own thoughts. Synchronicity, baby, dancing with the muse. We're in Union Square, the big tree, the lights of Macy's, people in Santa hats, and how could I have forgotten? Ye old Union Square ice rink. Zik heads straight for it, and oh god, Clabber Girl rents skates for the four of us, and now Gustav is doing a shoe clerk thing, lacing up my pair. If I fall, I'll break the camera, I protest.
We're with ya,
says Gustav.
All the way.
We're on the ice. People wave to us and skate circles around us, wanting to be in our stream. Gustav and the sharp-elbowed Clabber Girl are next to Zik and me, our guards, I hope. Gustav is holding that Tesla coil thing by its grip, and Clabber sculpts the air around it with her hands. The metal donut sprouts a decorative halo of pale purple sparks. I'm still watching the scene through my goggles, immersed in my processed version of reality. The images are compelling. The frosty ice, the twinkling tree lights, the revelers' happy mugs. We're sweeping in a circle, just like the scene I saw on Sunday night after Jumpy pawned me. And now comes the glitch. Doesn't even surprise me. A pop, a jolt of static, and our streamcast shows Six and Jumpy with us on the Union Square rink. An overlay, right? A video brush fake for sure. I flip up my goggles to confirm this, and, the two Hungarians are here in the flesh. Materialized out of nowhere. Teleported in from Budapest, you might say. Except that, up until 10 seconds ago, teleportation didn't exist. The physical Hungarians don't look like their stream images. Sex is an overweight hacker guy with a sparse beard, and by no means a fashion model type woman. As for Jumpy, well, turns out she's the one who's female. A lithe Euro hipster woman wearing a camera helmet like mine. She carries a tool like Gustav has, a thing that vaguely resembles a Tesla coil, with a handle and a column wound with wire, with a sparking torus at one end. I'm guessing that it, let's call it a teleportation wand. Zik, Gustav, and Clabber Girl already understand all of this. They're cheering, and Gustav's holding his own teleportation wand over his head, showering festive sparks. The Hungarians skate over to me.
Partners now, yes?
Says Jumpy, the Hungarian woman. She's very cute, slim, smart, ironic.
Your friends. They've agreed.
Solidarity.
Puts in Sex, the hacker guy. It's the same word that Zik used a half an hour ago. I glance over at her. She nods. Why not, I say. Not that I really understand. Mainly I'm curious. Can we test if our teleportation wand works too?
Wand is what you want to call it.
Says Jumpy and laughs.
Go, hop to Budapest. Your wand knows the way home.
Gustav beckons to me, his gestures grand and expansive, like a kid on Christmas morning. Zik, Clabber Girl, and I squeeze up against him. He holds our teleportation wand above our heads like a surreal umbrella. The lavishly cascading sparks enclose us. A pop, a jolt of static, and we're on an ice ring in, yep, it's Budapest. The Heroes Square, with statues of the nation's seven badass founders. Huge ice rink, with everyone staring at us. A minute later, Sex and Jumpy join us. Jumpy wants to talk to me some more, and for sure, I want to talk to her. But I'm still a little disgruntled about what she did to me at Seedy's on Sunday night. "Why did you pawn me and make me scream?" I asked.
"Sorry,"
says Jumpy, ducking her head so cute.
"That's when I was calibrating the route. Seemed like a fun, easy way, feedbacking your stream. My fan of your show, I mean, to explain this. But my words came through your mouth and not good result. Sorry.
"Apology accepted," I say. This woman is the one, at last. Her cheerful, lively face, her dancing eyes. Meeting her is as amazing as the fact of teleportation. "But I'm confused," I continue. "Seems like you need a receiver as well as a transmitter, like with a broadcast system. A device at each end? Just now we hopped from San Francisco to Budapest, and you were still in Union Square. There wasn't a receiver here to, like, unpack our signal?"
"It's not like a phone call,"
puts in Sex, the hacker guy.
"It's like knowing a route on a map. Any path that's been calibrated, you can teleport it from either end. This is the beauty part, yes?"
"The light dawns,"
says Jumpy, closely watching me.
"And now we make partnership?"
"Yes," I cry. "Thank you." I give her a hug, figuring I can get away with it.
"I don't get why she wants us,"
says Zick. She's used to being the star. She's a little put on by my instant crush.
"We need the Zigzag group because of your user base,"
says Jumpy.
"And your US status, and your knowing of the ropes."
"To be sure,"
goes Clabber Girl.
"Our knowing of the ropes."
"Zigzag Fat Stream,"
intones Gustav.
"I registered it as a trademark and a corporate name this afternoon."
"We're here for you,"
says Zick, beaming her smile into my camera.
"Stay tuned."
I check my controls, and yes, despite our jump, the Zigzag show is still live. We've got, like, a billion real-time users just now. Zigzag Fat Stream is in business for true. The six of us skate a slow victory lap around the Heroes Square rink, and I'm holding Jumpy's hand. The church bells ring. Mandela by Brent A. Harris, with music by Red Blue Black Silver, read by Jean-Paul Garnier. A slogging 2 hours since my last fix. I was alone in the house that day. A custom-built desert dwelling, a ranch-style home that had once been occupied by a pillar of our small community. I was anything but. The wife was gone for work, and I was busy with mine. Assuming, of course, work meant avoiding writing while sitting in your PJs on a comfy chair, your mind on porn, or ensnared in the latest Netflix binger. Both equate to about the same thing anyway, if you think about it. Try not to. Thinking leads to choices, and choices weren't an option anymore. Yet sitting there in my malaise didn't bring me any closer to my fix. I put the TV on pause and pulled out my tablet, trembling fingers stumbling around the power button, nearly dropping the thinking machine on the hard tiled floor. I breathed in as the device powered on, shut my eyes to the soft startup tones and a soft artificial voice greeting me with,
"Welcome, Brent."
As the screen refreshed and connected to the web, I breathed out heavily to the latest trending tags and clickbait headlines and opinion pieces on news sites devoid of objectivity. Who needs that anyway? And pictures of foods I'd never eaten from places I'd never visit from friends I didn't really know. Soon, I'd settle into the dopamine dose of comments seen, posts liked, bluebirds twittering away, my virtual voice heard. Relaxed, in the moment of zen before the high would hit, I saw from a local weather widget news about an approaching storm. It rained now, a lot, sometimes snowed. The weather had turned severe last winter, and it looked like it would this December too. Desert sands were mud. Joshua trees were gone. No one had seen a tortoise in the wild in years. I could have checked the source, gone to a different website to verify, looked out the damn window. Spoon-fed, I did no such thing, but switched the tablet off to do what everyone does at news of big winter weather landing hard on soft bodies. I put on pants and headed to the store, confident that my onsetting high would shelter me from any interaction, like a mask or a flu fog might obfuscate you from the world. I could have walked. The supermarket wasn't that far. Walking, though, meant running the risk of talking to neighbors or strangers, or having a moment of self-introspection that could only lead to trouble. Arriving at the store, I saw that it was packed by everyone else on their own little highs, their own little micro-doses of the world. It all made sense. They saw the same thing online and reacted the same as I had. Choice was a luxury long lost somewhere in time. I had just passed the bananas in the produce aisle, just beyond the bakery, when the high hit and the holes in space and time opened. Snowflake-like fractals cracked and spread across empty air at the same level of the Little Debbie snack cakes. The pattern stretched, the way you might pry apart stage curtains and stick an eyeball out to see the audience on the other side. In reality, it was more like a sheet of ice thawing on a sunny day. Given the hole's icy appearance, those annoying trending tags simply dubbed them the Frost, after the poet who had wrote about paths in a wood diverging. The gateways were mirrors, in a way. I thought of them as more like two-way glass, a reflection of yourself in an alternate world. Ever since scientists and sci-fi writers proved right about the Big Rip, holes were just a thing that happened. Most of us didn't understand the how, just that our universe neared its death after its explosive expansion, and, as a result, was stretching and ripping itself apart at its end. Yet the scientists were startled to discover something else. It wasn't just us. There were other universes, too. Imagine a stack of pancakes, each one a mirror of our own universe, atop each other, infinitely. The entire multiverse had expanded, each one at minutely different rates. As each one stretched and ripped, you could see holes form from one parallel world to the next, as if they were slices of Swiss cheese all slightly askew. Seeing a wormhole, or a tear in the fabric of space-time, was about as common now as witnessing a shooting star on a crystal clear night. Assuming, of course, you were cosmically attuned to see such a sight. I guess some people just saw things differently than others. For instance, I was a look-see. When the wormholes came, I could look, see the people I might have become had I taken their paths, made their choices instead of my own. Sounds cool, right? Trust me, it wasn't any sort of gift. There was no joy in knowing that in every version of you that exists in the universe, that you led much the same life. The Swiss cheese metaphor I was talking about earlier doesn't vary much from one slice to the next. You're almost never a rock star. It doesn't work like that. Probably for the best. I passed the busy Little Debbie aisle, moon pies in hand, oddly unafraid at the cracking, icy wormholes opening down each aisle of Stater Brothers. After all, I had Diet Pepsi to stock up on, and Red Baron frozen pizza, and of course, a bottle of Crown Royal apple whiskey, maybe toilet paper, for those were the supplies I sought when the storms came. I felt smug in my superiority that I wasn't grabbing the same groceries as everyone else, completely oblivious that in the scheme of things, Red Barons or Tostinos, Coke or Pepsi, there wasn't really a choice at all. Looking down from my cart at what should have been the baking aisle, I saw myself. He was a healthier version of me, slimmer, in active wear, with a blue handbasket instead of a cart, and there were big green leafy things flowering over the edge, things that I could not recognize. He turned away from me, unaware of either myself or the fact that he was in a tunnel of icy coalescing fractals converging from his reality into mine. I nodded to the not me, happy for the slight pudge around the waist. Fit me wasn't fun me, I was sure. He must be miserable. The next aisle over crackled with a different tear in space and time, and a different me. This me looked the same, but with a different woman by his side than the usual tall, dirty blonde with the big brains and soft smile that could kick my ass on her worst day and my best. This woman was shorter, blonder, and a little too into caked-on makeup and gaudy jewelry for my taste. I wondered how this not me and her had met, who she was, how they'd come together instead of the happiness I'd found. He didn't look any better off. I'm sure he was miserable. If I'd found the love of my life, surely he couldn't have. A young woman in yoga pants and a loose-fitting Cal State sweater passed me while I watched myself down the aisle. She turned, passed through the vision of me and my other wife, and disappeared somewhere behind them, completely unawares. She might have been one of the few who couldn't see the ribs in reality, who had no awareness of their alternate selves. There were others, like her, who didn't see anything at all. As a result, they all had something in common. They still strived for greatness, emboldened by a world of choice in which they might succeed. They were the worst off, because they lived in ignorance. So they thought and acted and made choices and did all the things we used to do before we knew better. I almost pitied her. Such a waste of efforts. I was better off in seeing my different fates. None of them were particularly impressive. Others who were like me, who experienced holes and breaks in space-time, who saw themselves cast in a different light in an alternate reality, readily agreed. With few exceptions, like the writer who got the breakout book, the singer with a sudden hit song, there were simply too many factors that relegated us all to the same minor set of circumstances, like crabs in a bucket that pulled each other down. Too many societal issues that locked us away in invisible cages. In a sea of infinity, most of us swam endlessly in mediocrity through no choice or fault of our own. Occasionally, I saw myself with a smile, signing autographs of my own work at the bookstore instead of buying another Stephen Baxter book. Not in a vegetative state, getting my high with my tablet thumbed to the newest social media post, but busily clacking away at a keyboard in earnest effort to create my own reality, my own fate. In those cases, sure, I wished I might be a Mandela. They had it best. Have you ever thought some teeny detail wasn't quite right? Or have you remembered something only slightly different than everyone else? Maybe you live in a reality where you're not aware that the universe was ripping itself apart. Yet, you're affected all the same. If you thought Nelson Mandela died in prison, thought the fruit of the loom label looked off, if you thought chartreuse was pink in color, or if you saw Sinbad as Shazam, you've slipped streams, gone from one reality to another. You might be a Mandela. I'm jealous. You might just keep slipping streams, like salmon bucking the current, until you arrive precisely in the reality you want most. For the rest of us, we were stuck. I was unable to move from one reality to another. I lived with strangers wearing my face, reflections of choices I had made only to reach roads not all that dissimilar to my own. It was rather depressing. Case in point, down the snack aisle, I saw myself once more, not fit or with a different spouse by my side, not richer or poorer, but as myself, as I was now, with matching items in our carts, the same Nike shoes with one lace that kept coming undone. I wondered just what odds created a mirror so exact in likeness that I could see myself in its reflection, and I tremble at the idea that in an infinite galaxy, there were more likely more of me just like myself in every detail than I ever wanted to admit. home again with the Crayon Royale open on my desk and groceries stocked in preparation for a storm that was only promising to come. I was away from the wormholes, away from my alternate selves, and back in comfort, safe. Yet my nerves jittered, and my tablet called to me. With all our choices laid bare, all our options seen like reflections in a funhouse mirror, there wasn't anything to ever do but to trudge along. No matter what choices we made, we could see firsthand that it didn't really matter, that no paths taken would ever make our lives that different than our own. The rips in space-time had come and taken our free will away. So most of us lived from one fix to the next, tolerating reality in the smallest doses, a reality that had been warped and bubbled and twisted to fit our needs and wasn't really real anymore anyway. We were happy and content in that bubble where choices couldn't harm us. I looked anxiously at my watch. It had been close to 2 hours since my last fix. In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard Fat Stream by Rudy Rucker, with music by Fog Machine, and Mandela by Brent A. Harris, with music by Red Blue Black Silver. Theme music by Dane Luscombe. Out now, Simultaneous Times, Volume 1, Paperback Science Fiction Anthology. Available at spacecowboybooks.com and lulu.com. Be sure to visit us at our store in Joshua Tree, California, or at spacecowboybooks.com. And connect with us on Instagram or Twitter. We'd love to know what you think of the program. Now a word from other fellow Joshua Tree podcasters.
We live in a very weird place. A dry and mountainous land of poisonous creatures and desert monsters. Missing tourists and strange lights in the sky. Join us every Friday at 10 p.m. for a late night voyage across the mysterious Mojave Wilderness on KCDZ 107.7.
Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Are you looking for a new way to think and transform? Tune into Myth Matters, a biweekly podcast of storytelling and conversation about mythology and why it's important to life today. Find a more creative way to live. Learn more at mythicmojo.com and keep the mystery in your life alive.
Have you ever wondered why people live in the desert? I'm Dawn Davis, and I host Desert Lady Diaries podcast. It's a weekly conversation with women who found their home in the Mojave Desert. Each week, I talk to women who were either born and raised in the desert or felt called to come here and what the desert means to them. You can learn more about the podcast and listen at desertladydiaries.com.